Hi, and welcome to Boomits on the Blockchain. We are in our 86th show, and we've got a special guest who's a famous author. She is a lawyer. She is running now the Blockchain Institute, Legal Institute. And this is our, multiple appearance on the show. Jackie, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me back. It's always fun to speak with you and to catch up with you, because I know you always are doing a lot of new things too.
Perfect. So let's just to kick things off then, Jackie. Obviously, the last time we got you on, it was about the Bitcoin Cinderella. That was your first book you published. Let's talk about the upcoming books you're about to write.
Yeah. So since the last time that we spoke, I also have the Bitcoin Cinderella and the Seven Dwarves, which I guess I have it right here so you guys can see it. It's all about Bitcoin, the history, and it's based in El Salvador. And Cinderella visits her cousin Snow White in El Salvador and learns all about the Bitcoin blockchain, soft forks, hard forks, the ecosystem, everything. I mean, it's a fun read. And then at the end of that story, Cinderella jumps through the magic mirror and lands in her next country. It was supposed to be Scotland, but it actually is going to end up being Bermuda because of a recent trip that I just took. But the Scottish fairy tale, the Bitcoin Cinderella and the unicorn is definitely going to happen. It just might end up being number four.
Exactly. You need to go to Loch Ness, the Loch Ness Monster. That's where I'm from, Inverness. So it's
I have visited it, and I would love to go back and do some more book research for sure.
From the success of your first book, now you're actually speaking a lot of events. Give us a bit of background of where you're speaking across the world and, some of the places and the information you're sharing.
One of the conferences that I spoke at in September, I have to think of which month it is right now, was the Government Blockchain Association in Washington, D.C. And I was able to speak about the blockchain maturity model, because I'm actually involved with the Government Blockchain Association, and that's one of their assessment standards. And then, but at that event also, and through that organization, I actually met the Washington, D.C. representative for Bermuda, Anthony Howell. And I was telling him that I was looking for a location to write my next story. And he said, well, why not Bermuda? And I said, that's a great idea. Tell me a little bit more. And he told me, about the 300 shipwrecks and a lot of the other, historic things that have gone on in Bermuda. And they also had a fintech conference. So it sort of was a combination of two things that happened. My co-founder and I, we went out to Bermuda, I guess it was last week or the week before, and we were there to do the research. So we went around the island and talked to individuals who were living there, saw different historic sites that are now going to be in the next book, The Bitcoin Cinderella and the Pink Sands Treasure of Bermuda. And while I was there, I was also invited to speak at the conference, the fintech conference. And I was the keynote speaker at lunch, and I was talking about the use of fintech and fairy tales and the education system and how we need to introduce this new academic vocabulary into the conversation with our youth, so that way they can see that these are career paths that they need to have. So it was really a wonderful experience, and I met a lot of great people there, and there was a lot of insightful conversation.
So when you're at the keynote speaking at the event, what specifically were you sort of educating the people in Bermuda about?
So there are about 300 people from all different walks of businesses, from the insurance side to the exchange side to the climate tech side. Google was there. There was a lot of different, it really was very diverse in terms of the people that were at this fintech conference, because they were looking at infrastructure, not just tokens and other things that we might be using as consumers. And so as part of the keynote, I was explaining to them, I was trying to actually make it fun and magical for them. So I ask them to kind of add their digits together. So that way they would be under 10. So everyone ends up being, I ended up being 2. And I did some read alouds from the book. But as I was doing the read alouds, I was wearing my teacher hat. I'm both an educator as well as a lawyer. And I explained to them that we're in whole group now, but you know, soon they're going to be in small group, which was our lunch tables, and soon they were going to do one-on-one, which is the networking. But in terms of when I did the read-alouds, I asked them for feedback in terms of which vocabulary in these passages would we need to teach background knowledge for. You know, for example, the wallet, NFTs, blockchain. These are not common use words, and so if a young adult or an adult was reading that and they didn't know this information, these books are an easy way for them to navigate and learn. There's a glossary in the back. And so part of my goal was to show them how learning can be fun, but also action items for them. You know, for them to be a mentor to someone, for them to educate their own family, because I thought that was important, especially if, you know, you have digital assets and you don't have a will. That's something I think is really important, because otherwise they stay on the blockchain. And to think about, you know, actually hiring people, and also from the perspective of teaching, having internships within different businesses. So that way there can be a next generation coming up behind us.
Yeah, that's interesting what you're saying there in terms of not having a will and digital assets. So what actually happens if I don't share my wallet or access details to a family member? You know, what will happen to those assets right now?
Well, you know, again, if you're not sharing information with your family, then they don't know how to access it. And I know I have a 27-year-old daughter. And when I first started, when I asked her, you know, if she had an interest, she had said no. And I said, well, you know, please do, because this is your inheritance, no matter how small amount that I might be investing. And so I showed her how to access my wallet. I showed her whether it was a computer-based wallet or a phone-based wallet, whether it was Google Authenticator or email. And I also created a book that's on Amazon called The Best 5-Minute Crypto Wallet Wealth Organizer that just outlines, because when we are comfortable going to certain platforms, it took us a while to get comfortable. But if you're brand new to this, you don't remember, you don't know the steps, you don't know where to go, what to do next. And if you're not teaching your family about where your assets are, then you're doing a disservice to them, because the wealth, generational wealth that you're trying to create will just stay there and it won't benefit anyone.
So what percentage of Bitcoin or cryptocurrency has been left on chain, you think? Are you aware of any sort of numbers of this right now?
I am aware, and maybe not specific numbers, but I am aware of a number of people who have come to me and said that, you know, that they have lost their wallets, or that they accidentally didn't realize, you know, that a computer had been, you know, given away. You know, there's, you know, again, there's been so many stories told to me as I've been going to different conferences and talking to people. So I'm sure that it's just like passwords. How many times do we forget a password, you know? And now that we have password organizers, but, you know, again, we're a little bit more cautious about sharing our seed words because of security, which I understand. But I'm sure that I heard someone talk about how, luckily she had written down the seed words. She had opened up a paper wallet and she had the words, but the paper is now 10 years old and the seed words had faded, but she's written down the words now somewhere else. So that way, at least she still has access to it. But again, these are things that if you, you can definitely lose. And I'm sure that we have lost a lot of assets online.
You know, I think for people going forward, they don't realize that, you know, these things build in wealth as well, you know. So it's, even though they might be investing a small amount in cryptocurrencies and digital assets, you know, that can actually increase in value. And, you know, especially if you start looking at NFTs. Now, I know NFTs blew up during lockdown, you know, and then everything, you know, this is the next thing. But there's a lot of NFTs still worth a lot of money out there as well. And people don't realize from an art perspective is, you know, it's like all art. It's like, okay, this person's made NFTs, but if this person passes away, they can no longer make NFTs. So the value goes up from doing that. So you might be sitting on some NFT you think sort of worthless, But if someone passes away, suddenly this thing can get value as well. It's the same with art, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, I'm looking at art on my wall right now thinking, okay, that at least, you know, someone can take that off the wall and know, okay, this is a piece of art. But, you know, with a digital asset, and that's why it's important to have cold wallets, you know, and also have your family understand or your executor understand how to access it. Because you can have your NFT in the cold wallet. And then, like you said, if the artist ends up, you know, gaining fame or, you know, the value goes up, you now have it and you can pass it on to the next person or you can give it to charity. I mean, because again, I also co-wrote a book with another attorney about how to fundraise with digital assets, because a lot of individuals are also donating their assets to charity. So that way, other entities can benefit from the resale of those assets to help with other mission.
Yeah. So just changing topic a little bit, and I've obviously got it in the screen, and then this is what you said 4 months ago. It's the Blockchain Legal Institute. You know, the web address is bli.tools. But can you explain a little bit more about this and how it works, et cetera, for people to understand?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So, you know, it's kind of fortuitous how certain things happen. I was at the Bitcoin conference in Miami. CleanSpark had sponsored the Bitcoin Cinderella and the Seven Dwarves. And I was at the booth giving it away, and a young attorney came up to me and asked for information on how to kind of step into this field of law, blockchain, Bitcoin, that type of thing. And I said, well, I'm not practicing traditional law right now, but I'm happy to give you resources. When she walked away, I turned to my now co-founder and I said, you know, we live in a decentralized space. It's really difficult sometimes to get the information you need. It's taken me, I mean, I've been in this space for 6 years plus, and I'm still learning because it's changing so rapidly. I said, it's going to be hard for her to navigate. So I drew out on a piece of paper the idea. I said, can we do this? He said, yeah, of course. So the Blockchain Legal Institute, we did a 2-month computer hackathon. It was launched in July of 2023. And it's a centralized library for decentralized resources. So we have verticals on news, events, artificial intelligence, Bitcoin, Ethereum, blockchain use cases, the laws from all 50 states, laws from around the world. We have different thought leaders that are contributing. So it's constantly evolving and growing. We are members with the Anti-Human Trafficking Intelligence Initiative. And we're also the media ambassador for the Global Blockchain Business Council. And then also for the Government Blockchain Association. So there's just a lot of different organizations and people that are involved providing resources. So it's exciting.
So if you're talking about legal structures by state and by country, obviously this is evolving quite fast. Mm-hmm. And then everyone's looking at the sort of Bitcoin ETF idea that's coming up in America right now. So where do you see the legal landscape right now for crypto and Bitcoin, et cetera?
So one of the things, before I answer that question, one of the things I want to mention is that we are all impacted by laws and policies. So the Blockchain Legal Institute really gives like a brush over of the legal concept. So as a consumer, you know, I invite you to, you know, to subscribe to BLI because it will give you content knowledge about these areas, but it will also expose you to some of the legal issues that might be pending or have happened. And so it's the BLI is our Blockchain Legal Institute is not just for lawyers or service providers, but also for businesses who might have an interest in creating a token or but don't know how to stay in compliance. You know, again, there's a lot of navigation. And like you said, things are evolving and changing very fast. But the for example, the laws in the EU impact laws and in other countries. So I was talking to a company that actually is involved with artificial intelligence. And so they, because they were going to be working within the EU, they had to incorporate in Spain. So there were certain rules that, you know, when certain laws are passed in different areas, even though they're not from that, you know, EU, they're going to be doing business. So you really have to have a global perspective now. And you have to have access to multiple resources And then you also have to vet these resources to make sure that they're current and that they provide you the information you need.
Yeah, because I know a lot of the exchanges in Europe are coming out of like Lithuania and Estonia right mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
So you look at someone like LA Token, which is a sort of, it's a major exchange used by people in India. But if you actually go into it, it's actually not formed in India. It's formed out of Estonia. So mm-hmm. And they have to be legally compliant. But then you've got places like Switzerland, and then we had Frederic from Solano come on there as well, speaking there. And it was interesting to see how, you know, Switzerland now wants to be a leader in the place in terms of blockchain. There's a lot of US companies now moving out to Switzerland. People are actually liking to form their companies out of Switzerland because, you know, in traditional bank, you know, you'd rather have your bank account in Switzerland than say Panama, you know what I mean? So it's like, because it's a safer place to go.
Yeah, the laws in Switzerland are also very clear. And I think that that's the challenge that we have in America. The laws are not clear because you have 50 different states that are doing different things. And then you have the federal overlay, and then you have the SEC overlay. And then you have, you know, other input from, you know, whether it's the IRS or whatever. So there is a congressional blockchain committee, and they are trying to make clarity, you know, for how we navigate. But there are so many different definitions that are out there. You know, in some ways, I like the fact that there's diversity in the United States because of the fact that you can go to one state versus another state and decide. But I'm sometimes concerned with the restrictiveness that's happening in the climate, because I'm all about creativity. I am about consumer protection, but I also think the consumer needs to be more aware of how do you do your own research. But I think that we also have to be ethical about this too, and when we're developing a business, so that way we're not defrauding someone. But again, I think best intentions for all these companies, and when we have restrictive laws, then the creativity that comes from these new businesses, these entrepreneurs, means that they're going to go somewhere else. And that brain drain is what I'm concerned about, because another country will benefit from the income and from the creativity.
They are looking for, you know, London to be a financial hub for cryptocurrency, blockchain, etc. They're wanting to, and they've already put their legal structures in place now for people to come up to, you know, to be able to start to issue cryptocurrency. You'd apply for a license. The license could take maybe up to 6 months to get this license to do it. But now they've got a license whereby, you know, in America, there is no license at this time. You know, again, it comes back to that. And, you know, maybe once BlackRock take over the whole thing, you know, so it's then the licenses will start coming. And there's a lot of, but again, you know, you're starting to, the longer it takes in the US to do this, other places are starting to, you know, gather ahead of steam. You know, you start looking out to Asia and you start reading about Thailand. You know, Thailand now, essentially cryptocurrency is, you know, legal tender in that country. So it's like, you know, are they taking a, and then, you know, I was speaking to someone who works with CoinStore, which is a cryptocurrency exchange based out of Singapore. And then he's talking about this boom in Asia, all coming from Thailand. And they're going out to conferences. And that company, I think, they're the top 15 exchanges in the world. So, you know, I think they turn over like $300 million daily in terms of the exchange. But, you know, and he's all excited. Anytime I speak to him, he just talks about Thailand. And you're not starting to think it. But, you know, as these places start to create some form of legal structure, which makes it clear for people to go there, then people are just going there because it's just everything's online anyway. So it's not like you have to physically be there. You just have to, it's like doing the stuff in the States here. So how long do you think America's got to catch up? Or do you think, you know, the longer we take, the further we'll get behind? Or where do you see the future in this going?
I think this is like our educational system. If we don't make a switch, and I'm still embedded in the educational system, so I can speak from experience. If we don't start making inroads within the next 18 months to 2 years, I think we're gonna be farther behind than we anticipate. I mean, because a lot of times people catch trends. So, you know, so legislators or individuals within the legal space might be thinking, oh, I need to be focusing on artificial intelligence because there might be, you know, they're fearful of that, or there might be danger. And so they go down that path. And, you know, and then when something happens, like, unfortunately, FTX, then they think about the crypto side. You know, again, when things happen, that's when people kind of move like lemmings, instead of thinking about the overall, you know, concept. And I think we need to think bigger picture, not just verticals. I mean, Blockchain Legal Institute has verticals because that's how things have developed. But from a legislative perspective, I think we need to think, how do we develop business? How do we develop protections for consumers who might not be educated as of yet, even though more and more are being educated? And how do we support development? How do we, you know, all these, a lot of these other countries call them sandboxes because they want to develop these businesses. We need to be thinking about creating sandboxes within the United States. So that way we have these economic zones where companies can trial certain things within the compliance side, but not so restrictive that if they make a mistake that they've actually, you know, and that's the other thing is when you're in business, if laws keep changing, you have no way to plan. So if you're going to be trying to do something and you're trying to budget and you're trying to plan out, and then all of a sudden the IRS or someone else changes the rules and says, okay, well, now you need to pay taxes on this, or now you need to be doing this. I mean, rules and things always change, you know, but it makes it really difficult when you're in a innovative tech business to future plan like that. So I think we need to be more forward thinking and not just pop, pop, pop. But again, we're looking at our budget right now, right? You know, how many times have we extended, you know, our country's budget? So again, we're not looking at the overall, we're looking at it in piecemeal.
Yeah, it's a sort of short-term thing. And I think, you know, AI and blockchain are tied together. You know, it's just, if you think of the first thing coming out, it was like smart contracts for people starting to understand. Essentially, that's AI.
It is.
Running a contract on chain. And for people to think, you know, and I always explain on what's a smart contract. The first people involved in doing this I was aware of was a company, Data Gumbo, and they were doing it for oil and gas. And it was allowing, you know, if goods got delivered on site, rather than holding on to the money for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, in terms of the payment terms that the oil companies were running, you know, the smart contract would be executed and the money would be paid instantaneously. Now, and I remember going to the Blockchain for Energy event maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and this was the first time I actually see them create a smart contract at part of the conference. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. It didn't even look that, you know, it was because the software they created was good. It was actually very user-friendly. Oh, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's agree this. And it went back and forward. We're two lawyers. We're going back and forward. Now it's agreed. Then it's set up to, you know, execute the smart contract. Now people sort of think, well, what's the point in that? Because, you know, it's better the money in my bank account, better chance to verify it. But then they're starting, you had the big operators like Saudi Aramco, Shell, Chevron, ExxonMobil, they were on the stage saying that, you know, we see this future saving us 8% of fixed costs. So, you know, you're Saudi Aramco and you turn over $1.1 trillion, you know, 8% of your fixed costs in terms of back-end administration. But really what it is artificial intelligence removing the people that did all that. And they're getting rid of everyone who worked in back-end admin, anyone who worked in invoicing, all these other people that do in audits, etc. That all disappears with this technology. And that's just like one use case of it, you know, which is coming in. And then people say, well, I don't really like the sound of that. But it's like anything. It's, you know, it's coming in anyway. It's just whether you start to utilize it as well. So, you know, we understand like tokens and then their smart contracts, but what other technology in the blockchain with AI do you see coming in that's going to be revolutionary for people?
Before I answer that question, I just want to make one point. You know, the jobs that might be switched out from because of AI, think of it, you know, like sometimes what happens in supermarkets. You might have certain jobs that are moved and changed. but then new jobs emerge from that. So we still are going to need people to be overseers and other things. So even though some jobs might be eliminated, they're going to be creating other jobs. So that's, you know, again, that's been part of the fear of new tech. But in terms of, I see it in the education space. I mean, in the area where I am, we're now being given AI tools to write lessons, you know, and I see it as advantageous for those. I mean, in the special ed community. And so I see it advantageous for those even with diverse learning needs, because it will help in different ways to both help with the, you know, the learning as well as in the construction of what they know, sharing what they know. So I think there's a lot of potential. I know at the conference in Bermuda, they were talking about generative art. They were talking about how to integrate AI into traditional business models like you were talking about. I, you know, again, there's so much for me to learn about this. I'm a Bitcoin miner. I'm a node owner. I've created NFTs. I need to dive more deeply into the coding within AI so I understand it a little bit better. Because again, there's so much I don't know, but I like to kind of find out more on the tech side. So yeah, it's immense, the potential for this.
Yeah, and it's one of these things, it's whether people like it or not, it's coming in. Mm-hmm. So you've got to learn about it. There's no point not learning about this stuff, especially for younger people. They pick things up so much faster anyway. You know, I'm working with ARPAN, young team out in India with this FT DAO, it's called. But, you know, it's inspirational working with a young team of guys who are like 21, 22. There's, you know, half a dozen of them working with it. But they build stuff so fast. Built with the DAO voting software. They looked at what they said, because this is a BEP token they set up. So it's in the Binance chain. And mm-hmm. they were looking at ERC-20 token voting software. So, you know, for people don't understand how a DAO works, is if you've got a token, then you can log on to this sort of online voting system. And then, you know, you can vote on upcoming, we're doing energy projects with them. But what's interesting about what they're doing is, you know, how long is it going to take you to build this? And I'm thinking, oh, maybe like 3 months. And it's like, no, we should get it done in a couple of weeks. And then they just churn it out. And they said, oh, yeah, but we're using AI to do stuff. We're looking at that. We're taking the code. A lot of the code that they've got there is out in GitHub for Ethereum. And we're just basically changing it for Binance. And I said, what will you do with the code? Oh, we'll just put it on chain so other people can use it as well. It's like this sort of rights that they're doing now is it's a different viewpoint. Because everyone, when stuff was coming on the internet and people were sort of inventing things, you were having this bit whereby, you know, the patent of it. I need to own the patent for this technology. But young people think opposite now. They just think, oh, I've developed this. I'll put it on chain so other people can use it and start to build it from there, you know. And I just think that the mindset of young people coming in whereby owning patents and owning stuff is from our sort of generation. You know what I mean? You're not thinking it's changing like that as well.
I think that there is a change from the concept of more open source, even though I do think there is an awareness that some of the technology innovations should be protected. So that way, those that are creating can get rewarded, because there is nothing wrong with residual income from your creation. So I think that there's a balance that's happening. I think that, you know, certain things, it's like a frisbee being thrown out and shared with the public, and other sides when it's something that needs to be held close and through going through the patent system, you know, it can. But I do agree that the mindset is different with this generation. And they actually talked about voting protocols on blockchain and how there are different systems that are being trialed, tested, and run with the idea of having votes. And I think that it would not be difficult to do, because it can be electronic on the phone, it can be verified, and it's all transparent. So, you know, and once the vote's in, it's immutable. For those that don't know, it means it can't be changed. So, you know, again, the idea that we have to do it through paper I think it can be hybrid initially, and then I think it's going to go electronic, especially if everyone, if we end up having a passport is no different than a digital identity. All we need to do is move our passports online and in a blockchain type of world, and then we can just have our voting connected to our passport. So, you know, again, if you already have a digital identity, we're already doing face scans in the airports. So everything is, you know, again, we have privacy is one of the issues that we always have to talk about. But, you know, I think it's going to be easy to do the voting. We're already almost there, you know, so it's just taking the next step.
Yeah. And I think people don't realize that, you know, the voting systems I've seen is that once you vote electronically, you can actually, and it's on chain, your vote, it's encrypted, but you can actually log in and see it's there and it's counted. Mm-hmm. Which right now, you know, if you think of like the last elections going all the way back to George Bush, it's just like everything's contested, you know, like how many did Trump contest, you know, about 20. So it was trying to turn over 11,000 votes here and 6,000 votes here, and then we'll have to do recounts and things like that as well. If you're an individual watching this, you know, it depends on what side you're on, you're essentially going to be saying the other side cheated. You know, that's basically what American elections have become right now, whereby at least if you can go on and say, well, there's the list of votes, there's my one counted, I can see that.
It's all accounted. There's no need for a recount because you got it there.
Yeah. So it's, and I think that from a peace of mind perspective, because, you know, obviously, politics, you know, the next election's obviously got the run-in already coming in. You know, it seems to be constant cycles coming in from there. So, you know, who knows who's good. Then whoever loses the next one, I guarantee the other's going to say the other side cheated. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's always that.
It is. I agree. But I think that voting, healthcare records, title to real estate, these are documents that are easily embedded within a blockchain. And it also helps when there's a natural disaster, because then you, if the paper is destroyed, you still have it electronically and you can still access it. And then when you think about all the individuals who are migrating because of various situations happening within the world, if they don't have documents, then it becomes very difficult. But if the documents were already put online, heaven forbid that something happens, they then can still access it, even if they don't physically have a paper document. And that's something that I think is where we have to think, you know, globally, not just locally. We do have our local responsibility, but we are global citizens.
No, I agree with that as well. I think it's especially when you start going into countries where dictators are running it, you know, because you might be farming this land forever. And it's been passed down, you know, father to son, father to daughter, passed down through the generations. Dictator comes in, takes your land. Nobody actually knows. Whereby, if this is on chain somewhere, the UN can still hold these places accountable. Well, this person said they owned this little bit of farm, rather than you just swipe it all. And I feel that just from this verification piece of it can change everything. And I think that's what's so interesting about the blockchain is it's so difficult to explain to people because I only ever talk about like a few use cases because the stuff I actually know. But when you start speaking to people, they're just doing it from multiple use cases. And it's a bit like the start of the internet. When it came along, it was originally just email and it was transferring that. Now, you know, you and I are speaking through the internet now. There's a million use cases. How many apps have you got? If you've got thousands of apps that all use the internet for this technology. And, you know, blockchain is like finance on the internet for a lot of people. It's, you know, through tokenization. But that's, again, just one aspect. It's this verification of information, the encryption piece of it. And it's just like the next iteration of the internet technology and using AI and all these things. They're all sort of combining together as one. And I know people think it's going to be a bit like Terminator, you know, which is ideally it's not going to be like that. You know, ultimately, there's going to be a lot of benefit for people out there as well with this technology once they start to see it. But it's one of those things you've got to jump on the bandwagon because the technology trains on its way. And it's just if you just sit there and watch it, it's just going to bypass you, you know.
Well, there's two schools of thought. The one school I agree with you is exactly what you just shared. The other school is that somehow the blockchain technology is going to be embedded so deep that individuals who are confused or don't understand what it is might not need to know how what it is at all. For example, like driving a car, you know, that's the perfect example, because you put gas in the car, you put your key in, you drive, you don't maybe know how to manage the tech of the car, but you know that it will run. And the same thing with blockchain, it's the underlying technology that can be used with a lot of different platforms. And you might not, the individual who's using it might not need to know how, but it's getting easier, because when I first had to open up a wallet, again, different blockchain is can be a business use case, but it can also be a cryptocurrency. When I first started to open up a wallet, it was a lot more difficult. Now it's a lot easier. And you think about it, PayPal, Venmo, you know, there's a lot of been a lot of integrations over the last 5-6 years.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been super interesting again, Jackie, just to come on and learn what you're doing. It's amazing that you're pushing the boundaries for this as well. And you know, it's my son, he actually, believe it or not, got out the Bitcoin Cinderella again. You know, so he reads it again. He loves the book and stuff like that, so he can learn about these things, you know, and his little friends and that, because they're so switched on to, they play that game Roblox, you know, but you've got to buy Robux and stuff like that. So they all know these types of coins and crypto and stuff like that with gaming. So for them to use multiple currencies, like cryptocurrencies and valuations, to them, it's easy. It's just like something else, you know.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. The generation that's coming up, this is very natural for them because of the gaming community and because of just other things that they've been exposed with technology wise. I mean, they grew up with a cell phone, and you know, Bitcoin is 13 years old. It's like a teenager now. So these are the kids that are growing up within this generation. They still need to have some understanding of how to navigate. And we have a responsibility to teach them about, you know, the social responsibility online. But the tech side is a lot easier for them.
Exactly. So is there anything else you'd like to share, Jackie, before we close the podcast?
Just want to share, everyone, hop on over to the website, www.bli.tools, T-O-O-L-S. That way you can register for the October 24th event. And if you hear this after, because I know a lot of times recordings, you are evergreen, just keep on visiting over there, because we have free events all the time. And definitely it's a library that provides resources for you. And if you see something that's not there that you need, reach out. We'll make sure we get the information to you.
Perfect. So yeah, appreciate your busy, Jackie. So thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Thanks to everyone out there. You've been watching Boom It's on the Blockchain. My name's Alistair Caithness. Have a nice day.